Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 15.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 15, Episode 5. That's right, we've already hit the halfway point for this season. From a personal standpoint, this has been one of my favourite seasons I think I've ever done. And the experience that we're going to cover today is arguably the most emotive, personal, and terrifying experience we may ever have covered. Now, I can tell you this, the submitter has, quite obviously, wished to remain anonymous. However, they did provide me with evidence of news articles, references, and believe me, what you're about to hear is 100% true. At least within the framework that the paranormal experience took place. As for the paranormal experience, well, it's both heartbreaking and truly shocking. But before we delve into genuinely one of the most interesting cases I've ever received, we of course need to thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. When you sign up to Patreon, not only will you receive every episode we release on the main feed, both early and ad-free, but you can also receive access to the Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Dark Bites releases each and every Sunday of the year, without fail, which means when we have a break in seasons, you don't miss your paranormal fix. Not only that, but there's over 60 hours of back catalogue Dark Bites episodes that have never been heard before for you to go and binge. But finally, and I genuinely mean this, the best thing about our Patreon group is indeed the community itself. We've built our wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over on Patreon. I, and I'm sure you, have been members of paranormal groups on social media where there's a lot of backbiting, there's a lot of putting down of other people's opinion. Well, that simply does not happen on our Patreon team. And that's thanks to the team members themselves. And collectively, we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have. Daniel McGowan, Kerry Peake, Erica Simmons, David Cav, Karen Haig, Elaine Ahern, Mr. Ansel, Michelle Berry, Susie Locke, Brittany and Tyler McLeod, Marie, Elizabeth Ashley, Sonia, Carrie Britt, NF Punk, Kimberly Delgado, Tori Stevens, Clarissa Rodriguez, Lean, Christopher Pewitt, Faith Louise, Slaytona, Cassie Smith, Julie Whitehouse, Scarlet Angel 1, Courtney Damaris, Tay, James Rhodes, and Howard Grimshaw. Thank you so much, guys. Your support genuinely means the world. And if you haven't heard your name yet, don't worry. We're still a week or so behind in trying to catch up. But I sincerely hope you enjoy all the early ad-free releases and, of course, access to those Dark Bites episodes, as well as the community itself. So, if that sounds like something you'd enjoy, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time. And believe me, this is not easy going. But lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable. And of course, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about the demon on my shoulder. Hi, Kevin. I've been an avid listener of your show ever since I discovered it in 2021. After I heard you speak about the sad man, I've been hooked. After much deliberation, I've decided I'd like to share my story with you and your listeners. A story which spans from 2015 to 2019. As I begin to write this to you, the pain, grief, and loss is difficult to deal with. So please forgive me if this story ever feels disjointed. It merely means that I've had to take a break and come back to the writing when I felt stronger. To ensure people's privacy, I've altered the names and locations involved. I grew up in Bournemouth, Dorset, UK, with my twin brother Robert and my sister Sam. I'd always considered myself to be a lucky man. I met my future wife, Mary, in 2003. 3 years later, we were blessed with our first son, Jack. And later, in 2008, our second son, Ben. Mary and I decided that with our two boys, our family was complete. So, saved up and had a simple but elegant wedding in 2009. Yes, our life had had its ups and downs, but all in all, we were happy. And it lasted that way until 2015. This was the year that would tear our lives apart and change them forever. In 2015, I started a small business and I took on an acquaintance, Terry, to work alongside me. Yes, the hours were long, and I found myself working 7 days a week. But I knew this was to create a better life for my family. Now, by this time, Jack was 8 and Ben was 5. When I wasn't working, there was no one I wanted to be with more than my wife and children. My boys. My boys and I were best friends, always getting into trouble, enjoying our times together. We would go out on day trips, go to the park, or just walk to the local beach and grab an ice cream. Like I said, we were just your average run-of-the-mill family. As the months went by, my business began to take off, which meant I could spend more time with the family. In June 2015, we were at a park helping Jack to learn how to ride his bike, without stabilizers. But no matter how hard he tried, he didn't seem to be able to balance himself. Mary and I put this down to his bike being too big and too cumbersome. If only we knew what was to come. The following day, Jack came to us, complaining of a pain in his neck and his shoulder. It being the weekend, there were no doctor's surgeries open, so we called NHS 111. We described Ben's situation and symptoms, and the person at the end of the phone sent out a paramedic to be safe. Now, as a parent, the word paramedic fills you with both fear but also relief. Not that paramedics are scary, but fear that the loved one they are responding to may be seriously unwell. And after both boys had already been in hospital with bronchitis as babies, our anxieties were running high. I told Mary to go upstairs and pack a bag with spare clothes and essentials, just in case the need should arise for us to stay over, whilst I waited with the boys. Mary went upstairs, prepared a bag, and I sat on the sofa and comforted Jack. And this is when my blood ran cold. Because Jack looked at me with his big blue eyes and asked, "Am I going to die?" But rather than wait for me to reply, he just turned back to the TV. After the shock had subsided, I gained Jack's attention and said, "Of course not. The paramedic's just going to check you out. They're highly trained people, and they'll be able to tell us if you need to see a doctor, that's all." Jack looked at me as if to say, "What are you talking about?" To this day, I still believe he had no idea what I was on about, nor did he remember even asking the question. The paramedic arrived and gave Jack a full checkup. His diagnosis was a pulled neck, most likely caused by attempting to ride the bike and not being very balanced. He advised us to give Jack paracetamol, and then to get him checked out by the GP on Monday. Well, that weekend I did not sleep. I stayed by Jack's side throughout the weekend. The paracetamol appeared to work, and he was happily playing with his little brother. Then Monday came, and we called the GP, and he gave him a look over and concurred with the paramedic. But something didn't sit right with Mary and I. So we took Jack to A&D, or Accident and Emergency. There, he was put through more tests, this time focusing on his neurological abilities. Seeing if he could walk in a straight line, touch his nose, and then the doctor's fingers, things like that. Well, he passed with flying colours. However, the doctor noticed that one of Jack's pupils was not responding quite the same as the other. So he requested a CT scan. This was at another hospital, as they had a child's department. Mary and I took Jack there immediately. We waited and waited. 5 hours later, the doctor came in to see us. He'd rejected the request for the scan, stating Jack had passed all of the neurological tests once again, and we were advised just to take him home. We headed home, and while on the way, Jack, who was now in high spirits, requested a cheeseburger. So we stopped off and grabbed some very late dinner, and then we returned home. The following morning, Mary and I were concerned. Jack's high spirits were gone, replaced once more with the neck pain. The following 10 days will never leave me. These days were filled with Mary and I begging doctors, registrars, consultants and nurses to look at our son. Again, we took him to A&E, to surgeries, and no one would listen. We were all fobbed off with, "Oh, it's only a pulled neck. Oh, it's attention-seeking behaviour." It was only by the grace of a trainee nurse that we were permitted back onto the children's ward at hospital. Even they attempted to push us off the ward, stating Jack's situation did not warrant a hospital stay. It was only when Jack went to the toilet, vomited, and stroked down one side of his face that we were finally listened to. Nurses and doctors poured into the small side room and they hurriedly lifted Jack onto a bed and rushed him off for a CT scan. Seconds turned into minutes, turned into hours. It felt like an eternity. Then a door swung open and our son was being wheeled back, now surrounded by a surgical team in blue scrubs. Everything was a blur. We were taken with Jack to a back room and he was immediately intubated. The lead surgeon came to us and said, "I'm so sorry," he exclaimed. "We should have scanned him sooner." Mary and I demanded to know what was going on with our son. The surgeon looked at us, his eyes now fixed, his pupils dilated. "We found a mass on Jack's brainstem. He needs surgery immediately." Well, Mary fell to the floor. The constant battle had taken its toll. I signed all the paperwork, telling the surgeon to do what they must to save Jack. I handed back the permission slip, and surrounded by a team of 20, Jack was wheeled into surgery, whilst Mary and I were taken to the parents' waiting area. Jack's surgery took 14 hours. Midway through, the surgeon came out and explained he would need to remove large parts of Jack's cerebellum, as the tumour had metastasized. He now required more permission, more paperwork to sign, so this surgeon can attempt to save our son. 14 hours later, Jack was finally returned to us, taken to the PICU for monitoring. Here, he was placed into a coma for 48 hours to allow him time to heal. 48 agonizing hours later, Jack woke. He looked around the room. He saw Mary and smiled. He turned to me, and his face filled with terror. He burst into tears. "Dad, get it off you! Get it off you!" he repeated, pointing at my right shoulder. I looked over my shoulder, but there was nothing there. "Dad, get it away! Don't let it near me!" I quickly moved my shoulder back and swiped away at it. "It's okay, Jack. It's okay. It's gone now, see?" Jack took deep breaths and held his left arm out to me. I got down on my knees next to him and did my best to give him a reassuring cuddle. But then Jack pulled me in and whispered into my ear something that made my blood go cold. "You have a demon on your shoulder, Dad." I didn't know what to say. Jack fell slowly back asleep and I stood up. Mary could see that I wasn't right. "What is it?" she asked. Well, I couldn't be strong anymore. I collapsed into a pile sobbing. The nurse found me a chair and I was helped into it. I explained what Jack had just said to me. Mary's face dropped. Even the nurse was taken aback. It must be the sedatives wearing off," mustered the nurse. "They can have funny effects on some patients," she exclaimed. She didn't look convinced, and I wasn't convinced. From that day on, my life went from bad to worse. And I believe that this demon is to blame. The 21st of June, 2015, 3 days after our son had been operated on, we received the news that day the tumour was terminal. The exact name for the tumour is glioblastoma multiforme. The tumour is aggressive, fast-growing, and there is no effective treatment. Chemo and radiotherapy could only buy us time with Jack. Mary and I were determined to do all we could to make Jack's remaining time as special as possible. Unfortunately, my demon would try to make this difficult. As I mentioned earlier, I'd started my own business with a colleague, Terry. The plan was I would finance the business and Terry would help build the business by utilising his contacts. I decided to contact Terry on the 23rd, discuss the situation with him, and told him I would be taking a back seat in the business and entrust Terry to run the business in my stead. He was more than capable of doing this, and more importantly, I trusted him. I woke up in the PICU in the armchair that I now called home, with Jack in his hospital bed next to me. I looked at my watch, 5 a.m. I turned on my phone and made sure it was on silent. I was greeted by a nurse who suggested I left, got myself a drink from the parents' kitchen, and washed my face. She reassured me that Jack was in safe hands and would be looked after whilst I was gone. I reluctantly left and went to wash my face. I ran the tap, splashed cold water over my face, took a deep breath, and looked up to have a look at my exhausted face in the mirror. But it wasn't my face. A second glance, and it was me, but an older face that had... I looked closely at my right shoulder, and my t-shirt had two indents, as if a bird or small being was stood on my shoulder. I pulled at my sleeve, but it wouldn't move. Something was holding it in place. I swiped at the space above, and the indents vanished. I pulled back my sleeve, and it moved. But I checked my shoulder, and I could see two red marks, like birds' claws, on my skin. I decided there and then I was either struggling with grief and lack of sleep, or maybe Jack was right. Maybe there was something on me. Either way, I was not going to risk this thing getting to my family. Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. Now, we all like to put off life insurance talk because it reminds us of our mortality. But life insurance isn't about death, it's about life. It's about ensuring the lives of those you love remain secure and comfortable. And I'm sure many of you will think, well, I'm covered through work or I'm covered through my bank account. But believe me, you want to check those finer details because you may be surprised what you're actually covered for. And this is exactly where Policy Genius come into their own. Yes, we could talk about how Policy Genius is America's leading online insurance marketplace or how their award-winning agents will walk you step by step through the entire process. But the best thing about Policy Genius for me is they don't have a dog in the fight. They're not going to strong-arm you towards one company or another. They've no incentive to do so. Their only incentive is to listen to your needs, scour America's top companies, and find you the best price. For example, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that begin at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options even offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. There's a reason why Policy Genius has thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot, and you'll find out what it is when you tick life insurance off your to-do list with Policy Genius. So head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you can save. That's policygenius.com. It's now the following afternoon. I had to stop typing yesterday. I had an uneasy feeling, as if I was being studied. Every word I typed was being analysed. I also had a broken sleep, filled with bizarre random images, which I'm yet to make sense of. But knowing me, they will soon come to fruition. This has always happened to me. I'd have a weird or random dream, and within the coming 6 months, that dream would make sense. I once had a dream where I was with my grandfather. We were merely stood around, yet I felt this deep, lurching loss within my chest. I even woke with tears streaming down my cheeks. What the F was that about? I questioned. It felt as though it took me forever to calm down. But after 40 minutes and utilising some box breathing, I was able to lay back on my bed and eventually close my eyes. 2 months later, I received a call. My grandfather had collapsed in his living room. Well, I raced to my grandparents' house, only to see my grandfather being carried out on a stretcher. The ambulance left, but notably without its siren on. I told my grandmother to get herself sorted whilst I checked the living room. When I crossed the threshold into that room, it was cold. The air was stale, stationary. It hit me that my grandfather had gone. This was confirmed by the doctor when I arrived at Rhesus with my grandmother and sister. Apparently, my grandfather had suffered an aneurysm and had passed before he'd even hit the floor. I'm sorry I've gone off subject here, but felt it important that I explain this uncontrolled gift. I don't know what else to call it, really. All I know is I don't control it. It happens randomly, and I'm scared of it when it happens, as it's only pain it's ever shown me. As I previously said, I was determined to not allow this thing on my shoulder to affect my family. I didn't want to leave Jack, but I had to see if I could stop this. I headed to the hospital's chapel, and as I approached the doors, I was filled with anxiety. Sweat built up on my forehead. My hands shook. The air, previously filled with incense, turned sour. I knew I needed to get through those doors. Now, I need to make it clear I am not a religious person. I never went to church or mass, nothing like that. But I have always believed in something after. Something after we finish our time here. So I pushed towards the chapel, stifling my gagging. I grabbed the handle and pulled. As the wind caused by the door swept me, I was met with silence. A tranquility filled the chapel. It was safe here. I cumbersomely made my way between the rows of chairs and headed towards a small room in the corner. I could see tea lights flickering through one of the stained glass windows. I went in, sat down on a chair, and I asked for help. Help to get rid of this demon, this entity. I took hold of a candle and attempted to light it, but it wouldn't take flame. I tried a second candle, and the same thing happened again. Every time I took the lit wick from one flame and tried to ignite the tea light, the flame just would not take. In fact, it would snuff out. It may make me sound weak, but the fact that I couldn't get either of these candles to ignite made me burst into tears. I couldn't protect my son from this tumour, and now I can't even light a simple candle. What the hell was going on with me? As I began to pull myself together, the chaplain came into the room. I looked up and was greeted by a middle-aged lady with bobbed blonde hair. She had the gentlest smile I'd ever seen. She handed me a tissue and introduced herself as Annie. She sat next to me and explained that she wouldn't pry, but would merely sit with me, if that was okay. I nodded, wiped my face, then my nose. The next 20 minutes, I explained to Annie everything. How Jack may only have a year left with us, how I'd failed to protect him, and how when he came around, he was adamant there was a demon on my shoulder. Annie stopped me there. She looked me over, as if she was looking for a stray piece of cotton or a rogue hair. She looked at my right shoulder and placed her left hand upon it. At this moment, shivers ran over me, as if someone had walked over my grave. "Have you been baptized?" she asked. I explained I had been baptized, twice, in fact, both Greek Orthodox and Church of England. Annie smiled, giving comfort and reassurance. "Nothing will harm you or your family. Your baptism will make sure of that." Now, although I felt comforted by those words, I didn't believe her. This thing was waiting for me on the other side of the chapel doors. I could feel it. Annie offered me a prayer to strengthen me and my family. I openly accepted. Annie prayed for my family's security. I joined her, feeling this overbearing need to cleanse this being from me. We finished the Lord's Prayer, and I hadn't said this prayer from when I was a child, but I managed to remember every last word. Once completed, Annie explained that she would leave me to it, and she left. I felt calmer. There wasn't anything watching me, repressing me. The feeling of this being waited for just outside the chapel doors was gone. I gathered my thoughts, had one last attempt to light a candle. I picked up the first candle, which had failed to light, and held the lit wick to it, and the candle lit immediately. I tried the second, and the same thing happened. The flame took immediately. I spent some time just watching the flames dance before I gathered myself and left the chapel. I felt lighter. The sour smell had gone, and I didn't feel anything on my right shoulder. Well, I took this as a win and returned to Jack. Later that morning, Mary and Ben came to the ward. I explained that I'd visited the chapel to get some much-needed perspective, and I then told Mary I needed to check in with Terry. She agreed, and I found a quiet area to dial him. I called his number, and Terry answered. I explained the situation and what I had in mind for the business, and Terry went silent. "I can't help you," he said. I said, "What?" I asked him to explain. I quit, and he put the phone down. Terry gave no explanation for his actions. He just quit. At this point, I decided to close my business. Spending time with Jack, Mary, and Ben was my priority. I was not prepared to sacrifice a single second with them. The following 6 weeks, we remained in that hospital, while Jack underwent chemotherapy and radiotherapy treatment. Nothing seemed to faze him. He was so strong and so positive throughout. He knew he was unwell, but he didn't know it was terminal. Mary and I decided we couldn't tell an 8-year-old. He didn't have much time left. We wanted to ensure his time was spent positive, not coming to terms with his mortality. Across this 6-week period, we would spend some time at home before returning to the hospital for 3 days of treatment. 3 weeks after meeting with Annie in the chapel, things began to happen. Nothing that would ring alarm bells initially, just more little annoyances. For example, planning a day trip out and discovering the car battery is flat. Going to get a knife from the drawer to find everything but that knife. Stupid little things, really. But they began to become daily and more troublesome. Whenever we planned a family trip out, it became the norm to expect anything to go wrong. Not normally to us, but to those close to us who were just going about their lives. it began to feel that any luck I'd managed to gather had disappeared. The final straw was while we were on Jack's Make-A-Wish holiday. He'd chosen to go to Disneyland Paris. Mary and I made arrangements for our two dogs and cat to be looked after whilst we were away. Everything was smooth sailing. We arrived in Disneyland and we checked into our hotel. We were supplied with our passes and told to make our way to the park. We had a wonderful time on day one. We spent a few hours at Disney and marvelled at the experience. Jack was exhausted, though, from the travel, so we opted to return to our room. Now, bear in mind, at this point, Jack was in a wheelchair. A wheelchair-accessible room was needed. Somehow, wires had been crossed, and we'd been given a room that Jack couldn't get to. The door was just too narrow. But the hotel staff were amazing. They sourced the correct room immediately and transferred us. And we all thought, finally, things were going right with the world. The following day, we all get up, tended to Jack and his brother, and we headed down for breakfast. We hit the park once again, and this time, Jack could fully immerse himself in the child's wonderland. Midday came and we found somewhere to sit and grab a bite to eat. As soon as we sat down, my phone rang. My grandmother had suffered with Parkinson's for 30 years. But whilst we were away, she'd fallen and was found by her neighbour. She was taken to hospital and ended up having to go into a home to receive 24-hour care. And this was a blow. My grandmother helped bring me up, make me the man I am. How did this happen? I asked. All my sister could say was, we don't know. It's almost like she was deliberately tripped. It genuinely felt like otherworldly entities were attempting to make life hard. Mary and I discussed things that evening whilst the boys were in bed. And even she agreed something was not right. We'd never experienced so much bad luck in our lives, and now it seemed to be spilling over. Mary leant in to hug me around my neck, but as her left arm went over my right shoulder, she snapped it back. It felt as though we'd both been electrocuted, and it hurt far too much to be merely static electricity. And then it hit me. Was my shoulder demon back? I hurriedly looked through my suitcase, pulling out clothes, shampoos, gifts, until I came across a simple pine cross that I'd been given by the chaplain before we left the hospital. I stared at it at the bottom of my grey case. I didn't understand why I was so reluctant to pick it up. It felt as if something horrible would happen were I to pick up this piece of wood. I slowly grabbed it, and the smooth corners now felt blocky, uncomfortable. I went into the bathroom, closed the door, and ran the tap, just so Mary would think I was washing my hands or doing my teeth. But I looked in the mirror at my right shoulder, and I repeated the Lord's Prayer. I could have sworn that my t-shirt moved as if something had stepped off it, but I felt burning. So I removed my t-shirt, and there, once again, were two red marks. My silence was broken by a knock on the bathroom door. "You okay in there? You haven't fallen in, have you?" Mary's voice came. "No, I'm okay, babe," I replied, mustering up a nervous chuckle. I put my t-shirt back on, unlocked the door, and came back into the room. Mary and I got ready for bed and settled in. I never usually wear a top to bed, but I didn't want Mary to notice the marks. But she did notice, and she even made a comment. "Are you feeling okay? You never wear a top to bed." I simply replied, "I know, love, I just feel a little cold." Thankfully, that was the end of that. We settled, and thankfully there were no other problems during the holiday. Until 3 days later, when we were due to return. There was a problem with the Eurotunnel, which meant we had to grab a fast train and then catch the Eurostar further on. Only the Eurostar was not prepared to wait. So then followed a crazy 35-minute rush to catch a train. I don't know how, but we caught it by the skin of our teeth. Well, life continued this way for the next few months. Until, in January, we got the devastating news that Jack's tumour could no longer be treated. Jack lost his fight with his tumour in February 2016. On his final day with us, Jack's big black and white tomcat came into the house and sat with him. This amazed us as Charlie never came inside, and I mean never. Not for food, not for cuddles, not even if it was blowing 90 mile an hour outside. Charlie was an outdoors cat. I held Jack in my arms and promised him he would be okay. And with that, Jack fell asleep in my arms. He was my best friend, my son, and he was at peace. Jack was 9 years old. Nothing felt right after this. I stayed strong for the family, but inside I was breaking. Every day hurt. As for my look, well, F that, I had no look. I even began to say, if I had no look, then I would have no look at all. To say that I was fractured would be an understatement. After his funeral, I would visit Jack 3 to 4 times a day to make sure things were okay, that he was safe. On the second day, I arrived at his grave to find his wreaths destroyed, his teddy's heads torn off, flowers thrown all about the place. During my distraught state, I called the police to report the damage, but my phone wouldn't connect. No matter what I did, I had no signal. Now, this wasn't normal. You do get signal full 4G in this area of town. I even reset my phone, but to no avail. Then, as I looked around, I realised that although it was 4 in the afternoon, everything seemed to be matte. Colours didn't seem vibrant. And then, again, it hit me. My shoulder demon. I swiped at my right shoulder and pleaded with it to let me make this call. I'd lost enough in my life already. I sat on a bench in the cemetery, sobbing. I asked God to help me this one time. My phone began to vibrate, to receive messages, so I looked and I had full signal, 4G and the like. I called the police and informed them of what happened. I was so happy to speak with them. I knew they'd be able to help catch whoever was responsible. "Sorry, sir, but without witnesses, we can't help. There aren't any CCTV cameras at the cemetery." My heart had already been smashed apart by life at this point, disintegrated. Broken, I returned to my car, where I told this demon to leave me the fuck alone. What else did it want? I drove to my local church, and I sat amongst the pews, staring at the cross, pleading for some help. Make this stop. A priest saw the state I was in and sat by me. He comforted me and assured me Jack was safe in heaven. He prayed for me to be given strength to fight whatever I was currently doing battle with. He made the sign of the cross on my back. And once he did that, a weight had gone. I no longer felt repressed. I managed to pick myself up, dust myself off, and leave the church. I had to be home for my family. They needed me now more than ever. People often say time's a healer. I don't believe that. Time is not a healer. It merely allows you to become familiar with the pain, so you can navigate it better. The size of that pain does not and will not change. You merely learn how to build a bridge across it. To wake up in the morning and breathe. I say this now as life slowly returned to some state of normality. Unfortunately, my unlucky little friend hadn't quite finished with me and was planning to come back now and again. I needed to take another break after this last lot of writing. It's been a few days since I last wrote, and I now feel strong enough to carry on. As I've said before, I hope these breaks aren't making my story seem disjointed. Unfortunately, this effing demon would not leave me be. I knew he was going to cause more upset. What I hadn't mentioned was whilst we were in the hospital with closing my business, etc., it meant money was tight, but we managed. A friend of mine, let's call her Tracy, offered to set up a crowdfunding thing, a page. I'd never heard of it, but Tracy explained how it worked. It sounded like the answer to our prayers, as Mary and I had been burning through what little savings we did have. Mary and I thanked Tracy after she set up the account. She would provide updates on how the fundraising was going, etc. After Jack was laid to rest, we contacted Tracy and asked her for help in getting that £2,500 to pay the outstanding bills for Jack's funeral, wake, and headstone. To our horror, we discovered that the money was gone. Tracy had been removing the funds and using them for her family and to fuel a gambling addiction. This woman had been a friend since I was a child. She was arrested and convicted to 12 months in prison. Mary and I thought, surely this has to be done now. We can't take any more bad luck. That's until 5 weeks later, and we walked into Tracy on the high street. She'd been released early due to overcrowding in the prison and was placed on license. But to make this sting a little more, she was given a property to live in with her mother and daughter, which overlooked our house. Mary and I were broken again. This creature would not leave us be. But something happened in November 2018 which I thought changed our luck for the better. Mary came to me on a caravanning holiday and told me to sit down. So, being the good husband I am, I did as she said. Mary pulled out a thin piece of plastic. I took it from her and examined it. It quickly dawned on me that it was a positive pregnancy test. Mary and I had discussed future children, but had both decided against it. We wanted to focus on Ben. He'd been through enough trauma, and we didn't want to risk potentially causing any more. Mary and I didn't know what to say, what to do. All I knew was we had to speak with Ben. He'd been such a strong boy during the last few years, and he deserved to be part of this conversation. Mary and I sat with Ben and explained everything. At the end, Ben smiled, stood up from the table, and said, "Can I name him? He's clearly been sent here by Jack for us." Mary and I had a name in mind in memory of Jack, but we allowed Ben to give him his middle name. And on the 14th of September 2019, we welcomed baby Thomas, named after Jack's love of trains, Thomas the Tank Engine. Life finally felt like it was back on track. Ben was happy, Mary was happy, and although cautious, I was happy. But fate, or most likely this shoulder demon, wasn't and hadn't finished with us. I found myself drawn to visit a medium. I went along and was greeted by an elderly lady. We began the session and nothing jumped out at me, and this began to feel fake. Then she said, "Your wife recently lost a baby." I explained to her that she was definitely wrong. My wife had a son 4 weeks ago, and he was happy and healthy. She apologised and continued the session, but nothing else seemed remotely legitimate about her. But her comment did stay with me, for good reason. Fast forward to December 2019. Mary, Ben and I arranged for Thomas to be babysat overnight by Mary's brother and his wife, so we could go and visit a pantomime and spoil Ben a bit. We hadn't been to a pantomime since we lost Jack, and he adored these shows, but it felt wrong to go without him. But this year, as everything appeared to be finally settled, we took the plunge. The show was spectacular and everyone had a great time. We returned home and all went to bed. 4 a.m. in the morning, my phone blew up. It was Mary's brother. Thomas had been found in his cot, not responding. I jumped in my car and raced round. I performed CPR whilst we waited for the paramedics. Thomas was only 13 weeks old. I did my best to save him. The paramedics came in behind me. They took Thomas from me. I'd managed to get his heart beating, but he was not breathing. The paramedics had to breathe for him. We were blue lit to hospital and once more found ourselves back at the PICU. Thomas was stabilised, but he was far from out of the woods. 2 days after Christmas, 5 days after he was found in his cot, Thomas fell asleep in my arms for the last time. Thomas was laid to rest with his big brother Jack, and we knew Jack would look after him. The loss of Thomas destroyed everyone, but I think it hit me the hardest. Not only had I failed to save Jack, I'd failed to save Thomas, to protect them both. The one job I needed to do as a father, and I'd failed. I reached out for help, for therapy, to deal with the loss of my children. I was diagnosed with complex grief, depression, anxiety, and PTSD. After 6 weeks, I returned to work and managed to remain there an additional 6 months, but I felt I had to move on. I began to work for a small children's home. I worked nights and would ensure the young people were safe and the home was looked after. I found a peace during those nights and any strange goings-on. Slamming doors, bizarre noises, I began to consider were being made by Thomas and Jack, just letting me know they were still about and they were looking out for me. During my first week, I was introduced to all the staff. One of them was a young lady named Bex. She was a spiritualist, bohemian type. She was a delightful young lady to speak with and cared passionately about the kids. After I met all the staff, Bex approached me and took me to the side. She whispered, "You've got something evil on your right shoulder." I felt all the blood drain from my face. How did she know? I'd never met her until today. How did she know? She continued, "It's latched onto the cracks of your grief." I was taken aback. I managed to get out. How do you know? Bex explained that when the manager had explained that a new team member would be joining the team, she had this feeling that I would need her help. This amazed me. How this complete stranger could read what I was experiencing blew my mind. It sent my heart racing and my mind raced. I asked what I needed to do. Bex replied. Nothing. Give me a few days and I'll get your crack sewn up. Sewn up? I asked. Bex explained that in her practice, she utilizes part of her soul as thread to sew up cracks on people's souls or auras. This is what my shoulder demon was using to remain in this realm. It was feeding off my pain. Without the cracks, he should inevitably leave. But you need to move on. You need to forgive yourself as well, exclaimed Bex. Well, I was just took aback by this person, and I just simply nodded. Admittedly, I don't know where this was going or even if I thought it would work, but I was willing to give anything a try. 3 days passed, and at a handover, Bex spoke with me. It took me several hours to sew your cracks up. You've been through a couple of traumatic events with your kids, haven't you? No one was aware of my losses at work. I made sure of that. Yet Bex sensed it within me. I explained my past and what had happened. With tears in her eyes, she hugged me and promised me that I was now free of that attachment and that it was time to let myself heal. Now, in 2024, the healing is still ongoing. Thankfully, with the help of my family and counselling, I'm finally coming to terms with the loss and the grief. I'm never going to be the man I once was. All I can do is focus on the present, the here and now. I'm also very happy to report that my shoulder demon hasn't been around. I think both thanks to Bex, and also I do my best to remain mindful of my emotions and any particular or peculiar things that may give me cause for concern. Anonymous. I normally end these episodes with a wow. I will end it with a thank you for submitting and being so devastatingly honest with your experience. And my heart genuinely goes out to you for your losses. Several times in recording that episode, I had to stop myself because my emotions got the better of me. I am in a current situation dealing with a terminally ill parent, and although no one can truly understand the pain and grief that somebody goes through, there were certainly moments that resonated with me more than enough to make me stop and have 5 minutes. So thank you so much for such a powerful and indeed paranormal tale. Doing my utter utmost to remain looking at the paranormal aspect of this absolutely heartbreaking case, what was that thing on your shoulder? How was it visible to Bex at the end of your tale? How did the chaplain seem to brush it away? Why was a weight lifted when the priest made the sign of the cross on your back? What was the origin story for this entity to just appear? Was it the fact that your emotions were completely torn apart with everything that you and Mary and Ben had to go through with Jack? It's hard to know, but there is a belief, as we all know and as we've all heard before, that the darkest paranormal entities will look to prey on you when you're at your lowest. So are we literally looking at a case of that? Not necessarily possession or an attachment, but more of an oppression. And there have been people who've said, why do we always jump to demon when we talk about these things? But if you've got a better description of an entity that only appears to flee in the presence of those who are religious, such as a priest or a chaplain, or indeed the person at the end, the spiritual Bex, then I'd love to hear it. And I don't mean that in a patronizing way. If you have a description which you think better suits that type of entity that sits on this poor person's shoulder, leaving red claw marks, I genuinely would love to hear it. I've said time and time again, I believe the current paranormal lexicon does need to be improved upon, so genuinely, if you have a thought, let me know. But for now, I'm quite content with the fact that this is indeed a demon that we are speaking of right now. To the submitter who wishes to remain anonymous, thank you genuinely for having the strength to share an experience that for the first time in dark paranormal history has led to me pausing 3 or 4 times to go and compose myself. And I'll also end this episode by saying, if there ever was an experience that we've put out that makes you check everything you complain about in your day-to-day life and think you have it hard and double-check your perception, it's this one. As ever, thank you to you all for going through this episode with me. I genuinely appreciate every single last one of you, and of course the submitter. I normally would plug Patreon at the end. This doesn't seem right to do so right now, so I'm not going to. I will continue to say, leave your disbelief at the door, because I do believe we should all still do that. But until next time, I want you all to stay safe, hug your loved ones, and take care. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.